So I've been asked to give a talk on dana. And so that would be a place to start this session. The first paramita is dana, which in Sanskrit and Pali literally means giving, generosity, or charity. In the practice of perfection written by Eckhart Roshi, where perfection is a synonym for paramita, he writes, in classical Buddhism, there were several categories of dana. One category was dual, including both the pure generosity that looks for no reward and the sullied generosity whose object is personal benefit. Another formulation was triple, charity with goods, doctrine, and services. Other formulations make it clear that dana was traditionally considered to be preaching by monks, donations of clothing and medicine to the poor by temples, support of temples and monks by lay people, and gifts to the poor by those lay people who could afford them. But as time has gone on, dana or generosity has widened in scope and scope. Its outlook is broader, and at the same time can be found closer and closer to this very place and this very moment. Generosity, a literal translation of dana, initially meant noble or nobility. And noble at its root means the one who comes to know. So please be curious about those two meanings for a moment. Generous meant noble or nobility. And noble at its etymological root is the one who comes to know. Interestingly enough, in the Mahayana Sutras we've studied at Mountain Lamp, in the 3-week study retreat that we have each June, the Buddha often called practitioners noble sons and noble daughters as he began to address them. They have come to know and thus are noble. To actually allow yourself to come to know infers that initially the noble sons and daughters, you and you and you and me, are acknowledging that we do not know. When we admit that we really don't know, we don't know where we came from, and we don't know where we're going. When we admit at bottom that we don't know who we are, a space, a spaciousness grows. We become more open and receptive because we don't yet know what should be kept or what discarded. We soften and our hands open and don't grab at, but also don't push away. The one who allows herself to not know becomes upright, confident, and generous in spirit, allowing each thing that arises to arise, allowing each thing that endures to endure, and allowing each thing that ceases to cease. The generous spirit, which is noble, says yes. It says yes to each thing. It says yes to the worry about an entire week of session. It says yes to the crowded bathrooms, to the noisy roommates. It says yes to eating too fast, to walking so slow, and for staying up too late and rising so early. It says yes to too much or too little, simply yes to all of it, or maybe yes to none of it, maybe just yes. with arms and eyes open, with hearts and minds soft and spacious. However, depending on your characterological tendencies, you might instead say no, no to each thing, and simply return to mu, to shikantaza, to counting breath. Simply no, to not that, and not that, and not that. Stripping away any and all edifices, allowing each thing to fall away until there is only the vast blue sky that birds, hawks, and ravens leave no trace in when they fly across. This path of no, the via negativia, traverses the great way of intimacy, where inside and outside, where male and female, where being and non-being dissipate, like clouds moving from the southeast to the north. This practitioner says no to each, for I have come to know, and I will not settle down and abide in any one thing until then. These two ways, as I just said, are characterologically driven, and you do not have to choose. One way is not better, one way is not less. The important thing is for it to be your way. And as you settle in practice, the way you move and the way you practice may flip. But again, that isn't the point. You and the way you naturally practice is the point. So have confidence and be generous with yourself and your way of walking this wisdom path. So whether yes or no, the generous spirit is open-handed and open-hearted. Eiken Roshi's teacher Yamada Roshi was fond of saying, "I wish to become like a great tree, shading all beings." The Dana Paramita was his ideal, as Eiken Roshi says, and his spirit was clearly generous and noble, something we can all be grateful for. Each of you sitting here is noble, having come to know. And this means without any additions or subtractions, each of you already generous. You do not have to give more than is appropriate, do more than is appropriate, or be more. In fact, each of you had a noble birth, a supreme giving of your mother. Each had a noble birth filled with the already blooming seed of the Tathagata Garbha. Each at birth, a Buddha, one who has come to know. That is why Dogen in the Four Virtues of a Bodhisattva wrote, "If you study Dana closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. They're both generous ways. It is noble to accept and generous to give up." This is why when Hui Hai was asked, "By what means can the gateway of our school be entered?" he replied, "By means of the Dana Paramita." So now I'd like to read you the first quarter of Dogen's words on Dana from his piece, The Four Virtues of a Bodhisattva. And we'll look at this over the next few days. He starts off saying, "Giving means non-greed. Non-greed means not to crave. Not to crave means not to curry favor. Even if you govern the four continents, you should always convey the correct teaching with non-greed. It is to give away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know, to offer flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagata, or again, to offer treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Whether it is of teaching or of material, in each case we are originally endowed with the virtue that accompanies giving. The question is not whether the gift is cheap or small, because its merit is still authentic. So you should always convey the correct teaching with non-greed, or you should always convey the correct teaching with generosity. And the way we do this is to give away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know, or to offer flowers blooming way on the other side of the valley to the Tathagata, to the one who has come to know. Although this may seem simple, at its bottom, that is all that this practice is. Whether something is yours or not, you give it. You give it up again and again and again. This is the Dana Paramita. It is being open-handed, not allowing anything to stick, but also not pushing anything away. It is allowing things to arise, endure, and cease as they will, just like the clouds which form in the southwest move overhead, sometimes bright, sometimes somber, sometimes solemn, and naturally of themselves dissipate in the northeast. And it doesn't matter if what you are generous with is big or small, significant or insignificant, sacred or profane. The giving up is what is ultimately of value. This giving up, this dana, this is dana as the gateway not to, but of realization. Where we are generous, where we give up again and again and find ourselves then to be multi-centered, at home equally in the call of the mourning dove or the cries of a famished child. It's where we find ourselves equally at home in the bright pinks of rugosa roses, or in the blood-red roadway of Mosquito Lake Road in the spring. We find ourselves equally in the sweetness of honey, or in the bitterness of spoiled fruit. A monk asks Hu Hui, by what means can the gateway of our school be entered? And he said, by means of the Dana Paramita. The monk, after some back and forth, then asked, why is it called the Dana Paramita? And the teacher replied, Dana means relinquishment. That's an interesting response, isn't it? Dana means relinquishment. And so the monk asked, relinquishment of what? The teacher said, relinquishment of the dualism of opposites, which means relinquishment of ideas as to the dual nature of good and bad, of being and non-being, of empty and not empty, of pure and impure, and so on. When we give up everything, we find we are clothed by the rain, the fog, and the mist. Each thing complements and completes us. To realize the great mind of the Tathagata is to find that everything is exactly as it should be, or exactly as it is. This is true nobility, where the practitioner has indeed come to know. It is in relinquishment, in giving up, in forgetting ourselves that we find this place, wherever it is we are, is our true home. Of course, because of our human nature, we seem to have to work very hard at our practice to come to know this. But as I said earlier, this too is a stance of nobility. And so as we drift in our zazen, there is no need for chastisement or judgment. Simply return to your one and only practice, which is returning to your unfolding life. When you find that you are lost in narrative or nodding off or daydreaming, use those very things to come back. Let your unfocused state of mind be a mindfulness bell reminding you to come back again and again. This way, the problem state of mind becomes an ally, pointing, reminding you to return. Simply relinquish, and the most profound and pure faith will arise. And this faith isn't an esoteric thing, but the faith of the cooing dove at morning. This faith is the screaming jay in the afternoon. And this pure faith is the rustling elk as they move through the brush in the dark. This pure faith is the natural light that we experience in each thing, as each thing. So I'd like to read you a short poem called The Snowstorm, written by Marie Howe. The poem has a Christian construct, but also, I think, a deeply human one. It reads like this. I walked down towards the river, and the deer had left tracks deep as half my arm that ended in a perfect hoof. And the shump, shump, shump sound my boots made walking made the silence loud. And when I turned back towards the great house, I walked beside the deer tracks again. And when I came near the feeder, little tracks of the birds on the surface of the snow I'd broken through. And then she has this in quotes. Put your finger here and see my hands. Then bring your hand and put it in my side. I put my hand down in the deer track and touch the bottom of an invisible hoof. Then my finger in the little mark of the jay. You know, it may seem concealed, but it is never hidden. It is always right here below. It is always right here below our regulated ways of seeing and hearing, of tasting and feeling. We have constructed and narrowed, often through no fault of our own, our experience so that we see the steps in the snow, or in the grass, or in the mud. But we don't stop and reach down and touch the light, the illumination that is all things. In darkness, it glows with brightness, but we too quickly turn on our flashlights or electric lamps, and we stumble past. In shadows, it shines with a splendid light, but we only see the shadows and grow timid and scared. Session is a lovely time to stop and reach down and touch the great heart mind. It is right here, below the thin surface of our casual waves, patient, waiting, waiting to touch and be touched. The world is constantly giving itself to us in sounds and smells, in feelings and sensations, in tastes and colors. It is showing itself and calling, and for us to be touched and touched, we have to relinquish ourselves. We have to give up our ideas and thoughts. We have to give up our daydreams and fantasies. We have to drop our stories and narrations and allow the world to approach us and come closer and closer and closer yet. Allow it to become closer, more intimate, where any sense of inside and outside dissipate, where the idea of us and them drops, where the fallacy of substantial and permanent is seen through. The invisible deer tracks, or better yet, the invisible elk tracks are everywhere. They have been traversing our days and nights. They've been traversing our dreaming and waking, and they've been walking through our dusks and dawns. They're often just on the edge of our mindfulness, on the edge of our zazen, and on the edge of our lives. In their colors of fawn and white, of ivory and tan, they melt into the alders and cedars, into the tall grasses and salmonberry stalks, into the high underbrush and steep hillsides. But though they seem concealed, they are never hidden. Look. Look. They are in each moo. They are each moo. They are present in each breath. They are each breath, and they are certainly present in the screams of the female barred owl, in the lone coo of the dove in mourning, and in the thrashing of ravens in the compost. And they are each of those things. And because you have come to know, and because you are noble and generous in posture and practice, those gifts from the world, of the world, are yours. Those gifts from the world are yours because they are your very own self. It's the self giving to the self. It's the way, walking the way as the way. So please, with open hands, give that gift. And with open hands, accept that gift.